Welcome to the world today. I am very saddened to report to you a devastating story that is being repeated in all of the news around the United States of America, in all of the presses that are owned and operated by the Jewish supremacists, the elites, who think that it's their duty to control everything that we see and hear. This is a day in which the elites are rejoicing. This is a day that they have waited for. A judge today has ordered an accused prison guard, an old man who is 85 years old, whose name is John Demjanjuk. And you've heard of him before. He was deported illegally to Israel, and he was placed behind a glass cage there and accused of being Ivan the Terrible. And the Jews swore up and down that's who he was. Oh yes, I saw him at this camp, and he was very mean, and he was this and that. And it turned out they didn't have the evidence, and they let the man go. He was found not guilty. It was very, very embarrassing, and he was returned to the United States. But the Jewish supremacists, the elitists, have continued to attack this old gentleman who spent 30 years working at a car factory. He's never harmed anybody in his life. And now he's being accused of having worked in a concentration camp in the Ukraine. Now, accusing somebody of working at a concentration camp in the Ukraine really shouldn't amount to much, because these camps were basically areas where people were kept until they were moved somewhere else, and in many cases they were work camps where people were supposed to be working for the good of the German state by producing for the Germans the very armaments that they were using against the Russians and the Americans and everybody else during this wartime. You have to remember that the problem was that the Germans were fighting against the entire world. It was just Germany and a few small countries like Italy that were on their side, and they were ganged up against the whole rest of the world. So they had to use forced labor in order to produce the goods that would go to the front. At any rate, John Demjanjuk now has to go to the Ukraine if they'll take him, and if he can't go there, he may have to go to Germany to be tried for this claim against him that he was a concentration camp guard. Now, the story, which I have here in one of many publications, this is USA Today, is very contorted, and it's not fairly written at all. First of all, they call him a Nazi concentration camp guard. Well, he's a Ukrainian, so if he didn't act as a guard when the Germans wanted him to, he, of course, would have been probably placed in the camp himself. There were Jews who were concentration camp guards. They were called Sonderkaptens. They were Jews that watched the other Jews in these camps. But you don't see them coming up before a judge and being told they had to leave the United States because they were a camp guard. No, but if you're white, if you're non-Jewish, then they come after you. Well, Demjanjuk has been fighting to stay in America since the 1970s, and they've never been able to pin anything on him. For a time, they suspected him of being the brutal guard known as Ivan the Terrible, as I said before, and Israel was trying to execute him. But the chief of the U.S. immigration, Judge Michael Krepi, ruled that there was no evidence to substantiate Demjanjuk's claim that he would be tortured if deported to his homeland. And he said that he should either be deported to Germany or Poland if Ukraine does not decide to accept him. Well, it would seem to me that, I don't know. I don't understand why they're trying to deport the man to begin with. He's been through hell. He's been accused of murder by the Israelis. They found him not guilty, and they keep plugging away and plugging away and plugging away. This is a measure of the hate that the Jews have for the white people of this world. It's not just Demjanjuk. They do this because they hate all of us. They have taken over our own government here in the United States of America through browbeating them with money, with media, and with the threats that making the media bad for them or sending their money to the other party can do to a person who's in politics. Money is the lifeblood of politics, and so is media coverage that's positive. And through this monopoly on banking and on media, these Jewish supremacists, these elitists, although they're only 2%, and the elitists themselves are even a smaller percentage of that 2%, are able to extend their power not only over America but around the rest of the world, and to use our military to do their dying and their fighting and their spending for them. Demjanjuk's attorney had argued that sending Demjanjuk back to the Ukraine would be like throwing him into a shark tank. At any rate, they're going to send him back, and I think it's a terrible, terrible thing. I would like to see the Jews investigated for the times that they spent as guards in the gulags of the Soviet Union. The Jews did that a lot. They were basically the camp guards of the Soviet Union. And you talk about torturing people, they wouldn't even feed them. The Jews were just terrible when they were in charge of the gulags all over Siberia. They could make or break a person. They would see if the person lived or died. And they were very vindictive and very hateful. But not one of these monster Jews who were camp guards at the communist gulags in the Soviet Union were ever sent back to the Soviet Union that I know of for being a gulag guard. But the Germans, the Ukrainians, those who were guards over people who were Jewish, well, that's different. They get to go back. But the Jews protect their own. Their own are the people who were torturing Christians in the Soviet gulags. And they're not about to let them go back because, well, as you know, they're very much special. Speaking of the hate that the Jews have for you and for me, there is a Jewish museum in Hohenheims, in Austria. And in Hohenheims, small town, there's a Jewish museum. I don't know what a Jewish museum would be doing there, but it's there. And the exhibit in the basement of this little Jewish museum has kind of a cozy antique shop feel. Kind of like an old-fashioned apartment, but when you look closer at the paintings, the paperweights, the pipes, and other knickknacks, you see something very, very chilling. All these little bebos, which is what they call little things in the antique business, are anti-Semitic, featuring large, crooked noses and other unflattering characters of Jews, and other things. According to the curator, Hanno Loivi, who's Jewish, he said he went for the comfortable, homey look with a purpose to unsettle the visitors and get them thinking. In other words, he's trying to propagandize them. These objects, he said, were part of a certain coziness. They were meant to be cozy. It takes 3 to 5 minutes, and then people realize it's not cozy at all. The disturbance they feel when they realize that they themselves are looking at anti-Semitic objects is much more effective than if they were there with a sign that said, "This is dangerous." He's got 580 anti-Semitic objects from the collection of Gideon Finkelstein, a Jew who bought anti-Semitic items for over 15 years. Can you imagine? Can you imagine collecting anti-Semitic items as a collection for 15 years? Mr. Gideon Finkelstein must have been quite a Jew to do that. I don't know. Everybody has weird things they do, I guess. And I guess that was Gideon Finkelstein's weird thing to do. Though the objects that are anti-Semitic in this little room date from 1880 to 1920 are nothing more than kitschy knickknacks. They are a way of allowing their original owners to exert power over Jews, according to Loewy. They are a way of transforming a fantasy of something dangerous into something you could control, Loewy said. You see, this is the type of hate. This very museum itself is a hate crime against Gentiles. What he's basically saying is, look at all these anti-Semitic items. Obviously, these Gentiles are horrible people. Once he gets you looking at them, that's what it looks like. Which is interesting, because when you show a whole bunch of pictures of white people, like, let's say, some of these cartoon characters, like Homer Simpson, oh, well, that's okay, but if he were a Jew, oh, that would just be terrible, which shows the amount of propaganda that has been brought against our people, which in itself is a media hate crime against us, which is why they bought the media, and which is why this gentleman, if I can call him that, Mr. Loewy, is showing the warm little collection of Gideon Finkelstein of 15 years worth of anti-Semitic items, 580 of them, we put in a little bitty room that looks very comfy, and when you look at them, oh, it starts to strike you that they're all anti-Semitic. Like, what am I looking at warmly here? Which is Mr. Loewy's joke on the people that go in there. In a separate room, visitors can listen to an interview in which Finkelstein says that he considers it important to save these items because they show just how widespread anti-Semitism was long before Nazi leader Adolf Hitler rose to power. This is a part of the softening up of our people. We see it over and over and over again. This museum is nothing new in the attitude of Jewish people toward Christians. Communism itself was a Christian hate group. The Christians were perceived as keeping the Jews bottled up in Poland and in Hungary in what was known as the Pale of Settlement so that they couldn't screw around with the Christians, which they had been doing. They weren't put there because people didn't like the way their teeth looked. It was because they were going around these different countries stirring up trouble. They were subversive. They were always trying to get people to fight with the Tsar or the Kaiser or the King or whatever. They wanted these noble people to be killed, basically, or run out of town because the Jews could not compete with a Holy Roman Emperor or King or Tsar or Kaiser because the Jews were not holy. The Jews were non-Christian. And so they could only have their way with people if they could get rid of this monarchy business that had been going on in Europe for thousands of years. A Jewish heritage museum might be expected to avoid the subject of anti-Semitism in fear of conveying a message that promotes rather than criticizes anti-Semitism. But to Loewy, anti-Semitism is a topic that Jewish museums can't afford to avoid if they don't merely represent a Judaica silver collection, and he didn't want to just show Judaica silver collections. No, he wanted to make people feel bad about themselves, and unfairly, because these are objects from 1880 to 1920. They're anti-Semitic, and they have nothing to do with you, and they have nothing to do with me. Of course, the moment that you go into Mr. Loewy's little museum of horrors, well, then you think they have something to do with you, but in effect, they really, really don't. You're listening to The World Today, which keeps you appraised of the different happenings in the world concerning Jewish supremacism and this drive that the Zionists in this world have toward world hegemony, whereby they wish to take control of as much of the wealth of the world and as much of the political power in the world as they possibly can. And it's something that we, as Gentiles, are up against. Whether we be Christians or atheists or Hindus, or whether we be communists, or whatever it is that our belief structure might pertain to that has or has not to do with Jews, these people do not evidently like us. There is a great racial hatred against all non-special people. The Jews feel that they were chosen by God, and they want all of his ungodly people around them to basically be under their boot so that they can basically do with us as they wish. Now, Israel, which is the bastion, along with New York City and London, of Jewish power, is supposed to be our ally, but as we can see by a story in the Israeli Insider, the daily news magazine in Israel, the Israelis have now sided against the United States and with Europe concerning a new GPS satellite system for global positioning. You may say, well, what's the big deal? Well, global positioning is extremely important in times of war. And the Jews are wheedling their way in with the Europeans and the Russians, who don't want the United States military to have a total monopoly on these systems, because in a time of war, this would put them at a disadvantage, because they obviously would do something with their satellites to shut down the geo-positioning of the satellites so that they couldn't have their missiles working and we could have our missiles working. So now Israel has pushed its nose into the business in this article in the Israel Insider. And Israel is now a part of the European Union's Galileo satellite navigation program. The first satellite in the EU's Galileo satellite navigation program was launched from Kazakhstan in Russia on Wednesday, which is a major step forward for Europe's answer to the United States Global Positioning System satellites. The new satellite, named GOVA A, took off from the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan aboard a Soyuz rocket on schedule at 11:19 a.m. local time. After the launch, amid clear skies, ground control teams were waiting to establish a connection with the satellite. The satellite, once in orbit, will test atomic clocks and navigation signals, secure Galileo's frequencies in space, and allow scientists to monitor how radiation affects the craft. This is a very expensive project. It's costing $4.3 billion and will eventually use about 30 satellites and end Europe's reliance on the GPS system, which, as I said, is currently controlled by the U.S. military. Six non-European nations, China, India, Israel, Morocco, Saudi Arabia, and the Ukraine, have also joined the program set up by the European Commission and European Space Agency. Discussions are also underway with others. I'd be very, very careful if I were the EU. The Israelis are very, very fond of stealing secrets. They've stolen secrets about our submarines, secrets of our intelligence operations. They steal them and they give them to China or to Russia. Well, I said give. They don't really give them to them. They sell them to them for millions and millions of dollars in profit. For instance, we gave them copies of our Patriot missile system, and they took them apart and they rebuilt them better than what we had, and then they sold them to China, undercutting our sales of our Patriots to China. And they got the profit, and we didn't get anything. There's our ally, Israel. Israel, the traitor to America. And anything they do, you have to keep your eye on them, because they only care about themselves, because they are basically working for themselves, which is what Jewish supremacists do. The Zionists simply cannot be trusted, and that's just the way that it is, unfortunately. One of the ways in which people are demoralized by propagandists is by trying to pretend that they're a straw man. Now, a straw man is a doll that you create, and you dress it in a certain uniform so that it pretends to be something that it is not. And what we find sometimes is that the Jewish supremacists use the straw man concept by saying that, well, because of Hitler and Germany and what we have said about the Holocaust, therefore, all white people wear this Nazi uniform, and then they start throwing spears at you, saying that if you're against them, then you must be some sort of a Nazi. It's not what you are, but they've made a straw man out of you, and they have then used that to continue to attack you. unfairly, because you have nothing to do with that straw man. Well, one of the ways they do this is sometimes to pull hoaxes off, where they'll paint a swastika or the word Jew on a building, and then they'll pretend that it was done by some sort of a Gentile, and then they use that to teach the people about this straw man again, this Nazi-type white that has to be watched, when in many cases these are drawn by their own people. Now, no one really knows yet who drew swastikas on a synagogue in Edmonton, Canada. But all of the usual suspects, all of these Gentiles and Jewish people in the legislature and in government came forward to denounce this and to stand up so that their Jewish patriarchs who were paying them to stay in office would be appraised of the fact that they were willing to do this dirty work for them. At any rate, the Prime Minister, whose name is Paul Martin, has used this silly little vandalization on Christmas Eve of a Jewish synagogue. And I cannot imagine, can you imagine somebody on Christmas Eve painting a swastika on a synagogue? Can you imagine that? You know, oh, Mom, pardon me, I have to go outside. I'm going to paint a swastika. And the acronym ZOG for ZOG, Zionist Occupied Government, I'm going to do that. I'm going to put that on the synagogue. And that'll be fun. No, I don't think so, especially in Canada when it's so cold out. The perfect person in my mind that would put that on a synagogue would be a Jewish propagandist. Because in the middle of Christmas, you could make the Gentiles feel bad about themselves by saying, look, you have this beautiful holiday, but you monsters have put a swastika and a Zionist-occupied government here. Oy vey, how terrible you people are. And, of course, the Prime Minister went along with it, because what's he going to do? Say, well, I think maybe a Jew did this and then lose all that money, and then his opponent will win in the next election. And the Jewish media, which is about 90% Jewish up there, same as it is here in America, in the United States, would just pick him to death? No. Of course not. He's going to turn on his own white people. At any rate, in Montreal, Prime Minister Paul Martin has condemned anti-Semitic graffiti found on an Edmonton synagogue, calling it, now get this, un-Canadian. Well, wait a minute. If it's un-Canadian, then what would Canadians be doing putting it on a synagogue to begin with? If it wasn't, let's say, a Jew doing it in order for this propaganda to occur, this big blitz of things in the paper to make the white people feel bad and soften them up, and make them feel like party monsters, then what is it? I mean, obviously the person painting it, since it's in Canada, in Edmonton, which is pretty far north, has to be a Canadian, so how in the world could it be un-Canadian? I mean, it's as Canadian as can be, if a Canadian did it. Is it not? Hey, am I missing something here, Mr. Prime Minister? If a Canadian puts it on a synagogue, whether he's Jewish or whether he's a Gentile, how could it be un-Canadian if it was done by a Canadian? You see, that doesn't make sense to me. Now, Martin, gobbling up all of the suck-up points he can get, was speaking at a Hanukkah celebration. And he said that the vandalism shows that the struggle for freedom and peace continues. Well, I don't think it continues, Mr. Martin, since you've done nothing to stop the Jews, who are supremacists, who are anti-Canadian and pro-Israel, from buying up all of your media and using it to browbeat you to where you keep your mouth shut and you don't attack them. I think it shows your coward-heartedness that you would even say that. Mr. Martin said, quote, this is not Canada, what happened in Edmonton. Let us understand that and we will condemn it with every fiber of our being, unquote. Well, I won't condemn it. I mean, I sort of will in a way. I don't think you really should put ZOG or swastikas on a synagogue. I don't think you should do that. I honestly don't think you should. But I think if the National Socialist Movement wants to wear the swastika, they have a right to do that. And whether or not it offends a Jew, it doesn't matter. There are millions of people who are offended all over this world by the Star of David. Millions of people around this world are offended by a cross. Millions of people around this world are offended by a hammer and sickle, and by a crescent moon and a star. There are people who are offended by many things, and there is no constitutional guarantee against someone being offended. But to destroy somebody's private property, no, that's wrong. I would agree with that. The Police Hate Crimes Unit is investigating the act of vandalism in Edmonton, the latest of several attacks at Beth Shalom Synagogue over the last 5 years. Sounds like they have a little problem there, doesn't it? In St. Louis, where I live, they found swastikas on the Jewish Library building at the Jewish Community Center. And guess what they found out almost immediately? That it was done by some Jewish teenagers. Yes, it was done by Jewish teenagers. And they kind of dropped it there. I mean, if it had been a white teenager, I'm sure they would have gone to jail or gone somewhere. Not very nice. But since they were Jews, well, it wasn't really a hate crime. Although I don't know what else you'd call it if you were trying to pretend that white people were hateful. Isn't that a hate crime? Isn't that an attack on white people? But you see, these Jewish supremacists aren't going to send their kids to jail, but they sure will send yours if it goes the other way. Well, to get into the little vandalism party here, officials from Christian, Muslim, Sikh, and other faiths denounced the vandalism, which came at the start of Hanukkah, the 8-day Jewish festival of lights. Isn't that clever? Now they're talking about it came at the beginning of Hanukkah. They did mention it was Christmas Eve at the beginning, but now it's like, oh, it wasn't done because it was Merry Christmas time, it was Happy Hanukkah time, that's why it was. Beth Shalom officials were alerted to the crude symbol Sunday morning, a meter-wide black swastika and the acronym ZOG. ZOG stands, of course, for a Zionist occupation government. A body, now get this, the story says, ZOG is a body imagined in an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory which claims Jews control the U.S. government and other global seats of power. Well, duh! Aren't we at war in Iraq for the Jews? I mean, it's not for us. We're at war in Iraq for the Jews. It was Sharon who said after 9/11, you need to go into Iraq right away. And so pretty soon we did. And we're not a Zionist-occupied government here? We didn't have Wolfowitz here, who we then put at the head of the World Monetary Fund, the World Bank. Duh. We don't have a Jew in charge of our national banking system here, the private corporation known as the Federal Reserve System. Duh. Where are you people coming from? We don't have 10 Jews in the Senate, which is 10% when they're only 2% of the country. We don't have 22.5% of the Supreme Court as Jews when they're only 2%. What is wrong with you people? You get away with this schlock? Yes, you do, because it's a Jewish-owned rag. That's why you get away with it. I need to calm down. Maybe I should take some meds or something, but I don't like to do that. I like to keep my mind clear, and I don't trust the doctors because they generally come from this Zionist tribe, and I don't think they particularly like folks like myself, so I try to stay away from hospitals. The story says that Holocaust survivors who belong to the synagogue and live nearby would likely be horrified by the Nazi symbol. Well, that's the trouble. There's too many survivors. There's too many survivors for there to really have been a Holocaust. I mean, a Holocaust means it was total, that everybody died, but there is no shortage of people who say that they survived at Auschwitz, for instance. There's a ton of them. I have met hundreds myself. I have met hundreds of them. I was reading in a Reuters story here, which says that the Israelis are firing into Gaza to create a no-go zone. In other words, don't go there. And they claim that it's aimed to stop cross-border rocket fire by militants, but the Palestinian Authority has condemned the move and said that it's just another move by the Israeli government to continue to keep this land from the Palestinian people. Because obviously if they're constantly shelling there, the people can't live there. It becomes a dangerous area. It becomes basically an area that falls to the Israelis by adverse possession. Not that the Israelis go there, but the Palestinians cannot go there. Now, President Mahmoud Abbas, who is the president of Palestine, or what right now is Palestine, says that Israel has left the Gaza Strip and has no right to come back. They should not make any pretext, he says. Israel, on the other hand, says that there is no plan for ground forces to reenter Gaza. The aim of the bombing and the terrorism is to step up airstrikes and shelling from land and sea, but that has so far done little to stop the firing of rockets into the Jewish state. But rocket firing, the Palestinians say, is retaliation for Israeli military action there and in the West Bank, including their bombing. And that rocket firing is a political headache for Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon as he campaigns to win a third term on a platform of ending the conflict. Firing by the Israelis and by the Palestinians going back the other way. Rightists who oppose Sharon's widely popular Gaza pullout argue that the rocket fire proves that giving up any of the land that the Palestinians want for a state will only bring more violence and cannot lead to peace. Well, I guess that's true, Mr. Sharon and all the people running against you. It's very, very difficult, it seems to me, to have peace in a land that you've stolen from somebody else. And the only way you're going to ever make it work is to herd these people into reservations the way we did the Indians after they kept sadistically trying to destroy our people by hitting us with hatchets and arrows until finally we kicked their butts and we put them into reservations. And until you are willing to do that, well, you're going to get shelled. You're going to get bombed. But you don't have the power to put them into reservations, or you would have done it. Basically, you're a puny little crap nation. And just like the French have said, you're a little crappy nation, and you amount to nothing. And you never will amount to anything. Unless you control a bigger company, a bigger country, and it is a company. The United States is a corporation, basically, run by the elites. Unless you control another corporate country like the United States that's huge, you can't be anything. But fortunately for you, you do control the United States, don't you? Yes, I can attest to that because I live here and I know your hatred for me and for my people because I see it in your newspapers every single day. So you need to stop messing with the Palestinian Authority, with Gaza. You need to think probably about getting out of Israel because, basically, you stole the land from these people, and it's genocidal, and basically you're acting like a bunch of Nazis there because you have perfected Hitler's use of military diplomacy, and that's all Israel is about, is military and financial and economic diplomacy through threat and terror. So please, leave these Gaza people alone. You've tortured them for 50 years. That's more than enough. And if people did that to you, you'd be saying, oy vey, you're so anti-Semitic. Well, I've got news for you, Israel. Arabs and Palestinians are Semites, too. Since you're torturing them like this, that makes you just about the biggest anti-Semite on the planet. I don't want you to get me wrong. I've been using the name Israel, which the Jewish elitists in that area of the world have been calling their little crappy country. But it really isn't Israel. What it is occupied Palestine. Occupied Palestine is what I should call it, but I keep forgetting because I keep reading all of these things in thousands and thousands of Zionist elitist newspapers and hearing it from Zionist elitist television authorities who own the different media news outlets here in America, like Fox, ABC, CBS, NBC. All of them use this word Israel when they're really describing occupied Palestine. I'd like to cross several countries and cross a continent now and go to the United Kingdom for a moment. Jewish influence is so prevalent everywhere that every nation is affected by their propaganda. And we have a newspaper story here from the News Telegraph in London that pupils are going to now, because they've been studying Hitler too much, they evidently found Hitler extremely fascinating, as did their instructors. And so in their high schools and colleges, the most of their history was about Hitler, because everyone was so fascinated. And probably, if you break it down, the reason they're fascinated is they're seeing their country being destroyed by globalism, which is what Hitler fought against. And the Jews have taken cognizance of this, as well as all of their vassals within England. So guess what? Now they're going to control the textbooks so that students are going to study Germany after Hitler and not during Hitler. They're going to be given a more positive image of modern Germany to address criticism that they concentrate too much on its Nazi past. Well, we wouldn't want them doing that, would we? Because they might be too interested in that, and they might get the wrong idea. They might figure out what the Jews are doing here in England by destroying it, by bringing Arabs and other people who don't belong here. And we might have to get rid of them, and then we couldn't hire them to work in our department stores for next to nothing. The new lessons now for 11 to 14-year-olds will look at post-war reconstruction and moves toward greater European integration. Look at that. Post-war reconstruction and moves toward greater European integration. The big word here is integration. And by that they mean the integration of all the nations of Europe so that they'll all become one nation, which is a lot easier for the Jewish supremacists to control because they only have to go to one capital. If they can corrupt just one capital instead of 13 or 14 capitals, well, they'll be miles ahead. And they can also, from a multi-nation capital, destroy anything that the people within a nation want to have happen, because they'll say, well, you just have to do this in order to be an integrated European. We can't let you in France do this, and you in Germany can't do it. We all have to do it together. You've seen it happen in America and Canada. It's the way they do it. And it's happened in England. They did it with Wales, with England itself, with Britain, with Wales, with Scotland, with Ireland. Well, you're in the United Kingdom, so now you have to do it the way we all do it. And so they take away your local control and your ability to do what you want. Could you have to do what somebody living thousands of miles away from you wants you to do? And the further away they live from you, the less control you'll ever have on them. These students, who are 11 to 14-year-olds, will now be taught for the first time as part of the curriculum about the circumstances that led to the partition of Germany and the building of the Berlin Wall. They will learn about the collapse of the Iron Curtain and the pulling down of the wall as East and West Germany reunited as part of a new unit, intended to bring more balance to a curriculum which has been dominated by the study of Adolf Hitler. Well, I'm sorry, but I know what you're doing here. You found they were a little too fascinated with Hitler, maybe not fascinated enough with your story about the Holocaust. The move was prompted by criticism from Thomas Matusek, the former German ambassador to London, when he said this year that the British behaved as if they had conquered Hitler's horde single-handedly. Britain and Germany were drifting apart because British children were growing up with dangerous misunderstandings about Germany through the concentration on teaching about Hitler. Well, methinks not. I smell a Jew here. My Jew sniffer is at full bloom on this story. I want to swing back across the continent to our little friends in Israel again, where an ex-banker has said that Benjamin Netanyahu is wrong about his economic policies. This ex-Bank of Israel official claims that most poor people work, The welfare cuts actually retard economic growth, and that more and more poor people are becoming paupers. This is according to Professor Zvi Zussman, former Bank of Israel deputy governor, and of course a Zionist. Mr. Zionist Zussman said that the origin of poverty in Israel is the job market, which has demonstrated over the past 20 years growing gaps that have increased the number of poor wage earners. The gaps in the job market in Israel have reached a very high level also in comparison to other countries. Therefore, treating the job market is the foundation of and key to rescuing many citizens from below the poverty line. This must be done through decreasing the number of low-wage earners on the market. Sussman also said that the job market creates social gaps and poverty because of changes in technology that enhance the demand for educated workers while weakening the bargaining power of unskilled workers. Gaps also stem from the increase in the import of foreign workers, the reduction in the influence of labor unions, the rise in unemployment rates among uneducated members of society, and inequality in education. I've heard that communist claptrap all my life. It couldn't have to do with genetics, that there are some Israelis who genetically are smarter than others. No, it has to be inequitable education. Well, maybe they have inequitable education because genetically they're not quite as smart as those who are successful. You certainly wouldn't say in America that if you spent $4 billion you could take any white boy and make him into a basketball player, you know, the likes of the finest NBA players. I don't care how much you spend on a white boy, you're probably not going to get that. You'd want to do that with black kids. But we spent a fortune trying to educate black kids to the level of white kids, and it just hasn't worked out because they just don't have it education-wise. But boy, they sure are good on the basketball court. And they're better than we are there. But we happen to be really good at education. By the way, Israel tries to say that it is such a smart country, but you know that its national IQ is under 100 by quite a bit. Yeah, it's not even average. It's not even average. These people are not as smart as they say, and in my opinion, it's because the reason that they're able to have so many doctors and so many actors and so many film studios and so many companies is that they basically hire their own. If you're a Jew and you go to Hollywood, you get hired. If you're a Gentile and you go to Hollywood, you don't get hired because 80% of the actors and directors and producers out there are Jewish. And God help you if you are a Gentile who has any personal clarity like Mel Gibson and decide that you're going to have a unapproved movie about Jesus Christ in which you show exactly what the Jews did to him, which was to thrash him within an inch of his life for an entire evening of Jewish fun. God help you if you stand up like him. Look what they tried to do to him. According to Zussman, from 1990 to 2004, 1 million people dropped below the poverty line. He added that a large portion of this number comes from wage-earning families, which are slipping downwards from the poverty line due to income gaps in the market. He pointed to a process of, here comes the communist terminology, proletarianization of poverty and a proletariat of foot-dragging. Mr. Zussman also said, it is not a poverty of bums and not necessarily of part-time workers. More than half of those below the poverty line work full-time. The problem is that 67% of wage earners in poor families are low-wage earners. And that means, Mr. Zussman, according to what you just said, that they are not very smart. That they don't have a high education because they probably flunked out since you have a education system there, which I believe educates everybody. So there's no excuse for them not to be smart, except that they were just not born smart, were they? You who are the so-called superior race, the Jewish supremacist race, and you've got all these low wage earners. Why? Because I'll quote you, you say the origin of poverty is the job market, and it has to do with skilled workers versus unskilled workers, educated workers versus uneducated workers. And that means, Mr. Zussman, that in Israel, your workers, in a large part, are, guess what? Uneducated. And that means you folks aren't all that smart, are you? Well, of course, we can't get through the day without talking about Spielberg's movie Munich, which keeps coming up in the forefront among the news media. It is kind of interesting that people just don't really like this movie, evidently. I mean, the Israelis evidently have something against it. I'm not sure exactly what, but maybe it's the fact that they talk about the Mossad at all. But a pocket full of receipts, it turns out, helped blow the lid off of Israel's most notorious intelligence bungle, which was in Norway. It was back in 1973 after spies were dispatched to Norway, killing a waiter who was mistaken for the Palestinian mastermind of a raid on the previous year's Munich Olympics, where 11 Israeli athletes died. The assassins might have got away, except that one of them was not a trained member of Israel's spy agency, Mossad, but was a mere Danish-born volunteer who was brought aboard mainly for his language skills. Hoping to recoup his expenses, he had kept his receipts. Probably because he was working with Jews, probably. He felt like, if I had receipts, maybe I'd get paid. Once detained by Norwegian police, however, he provided a paper trail that led to the capture and prosecution for murder of all of the rest of the Mossad agents. So in this movie, we have Steven Spielberg showing a Mossad case officer ordering agents to hoard receipts while in deep cover abroad, which of course raised the eyebrows among veterans of the intelligence service. Former field agent Gad Shemron said when asked about the thriller Munich, "It's absurd to see the modus operandi as you see it in this movie." He said agents are expected to account for their expenses, but not if it means incurring the risk of discovery. They can just as easily declare their expenses from memory when they return home, and it's accepted on trust, he told Reuters. Can you imagine what it must cost to run the Mossad? You have these Jews out there rattling off from the top of their mind what they spent. Don't you think they would maybe cushion that a little bit to get a little bit extra money? Yeah, they just do it on trust. That is just one of a list of complaints that's been made about Munich by those with direct knowledge of the Israeli reprisal campaign. Spielberg's version paints a grim picture of what befell five men sent by Israel to track and kill members of the Palestinian Liberation Organization, which was blamed for the raid. The film is based on Vengeance, a 1984 book purporting to chronicle the confessions of an assassin who broke ranks in protest at Israel's two-fisted tactics. It portrays a hit team unleashed on Europe and the Middle East with little supervision, torn by self-doubt, and on the run from Palestinian gunmen. I like action films. That probably would be interesting. I could put that on my YouTube and see what it looks like. I have always said that the Jews are the best storytellers and they make the best movie makers because, A, they were born on a stage and they demand to be at the front of the stage always, whether it's in government, owning the media, owning the banks, or owning the theater itself. Spielberg was careful to add the disclaimer that the film was merely inspired by recent events, but many Israelis say they are disappointed. I think it's a tragedy that a person of the stature of Steven Spielberg, who has made such fantastic films, should have based this film on a book that is a falsehood, said David Kempchi, a senior Mossad official in the 1970s. Well, Mr. Kempchi, let me tell you something. You ought to see Roots. You ought to see another Spielberg deal, which was called Amistad. You know, about these blacks that took over this ship. And the Supreme Court of the United States said they could go home, that they had broken free in international waters, and therefore what they did was legal. And the main character goes back, and that's all you hear about in the movie, but you know what he did when he got back? and Spielberg doesn't tell you about it. Guess what he did? He became a slave dealer. He would go out and round up Africans, put them in chains, bring them to the harbor, and sell them for slaves. That's what he did. That was a guy that we let go. Learned a lot, didn't he? Well, if Spielberg didn't reveal that, and if in his film, which I believe he did, which was Schindler's List, he didn't reveal that the commandant of that prison, who was shooting prisoners from his balcony, couldn't possibly have done so because there was a mountain in between his balcony and where the prison was, and secondly, that the SS had tried him and found him guilty of violating German law and had sentenced him to death, if he's not going to say that, then why would you think that he would be honest about the Mossad? The man is a theatrical liar. What you guys in Israel, who call yourself Mossad agents, should be doing is protesting the building of the Zionist Tolerance Museum on top of a Palestinian graveyard right in the middle of Jerusalem, which is an act of insensitivity, it's insulting, and it's very genocidal because it wipes out the memory of the people who lived there long before you folks got back there. The desecration of this Palestinian graveyard adds insult to the injury that you Israelis, you Zionists, have already done to these people in occupied Palestine. A literally monumental display of chutzpah is being planned by Israeli officials in occupied Jerusalem, which the Zionists claim is their capital, when they open this Museum of Tolerance. A new Museum of Tolerance, which is aimed at instilling Gentile guilt for the alleged Holocaust of World War II, is being constructed on top of this Palestinian graveyard, which is hundreds and hundreds of years old. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is beholden to Jewish interests because of his father's Second World War history, was induced by the Zionists to lay the cornerstone of this museum in 2004. According to NationalVanguard.org, there is something ghoulishly poetic about the appearance of a Holocaust memorial site atop the bodies of defeated Palestinians. As Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has pointed out, the Holocaust legend is the propaganda key to the whole Zionist project, morally absolving Israel and Jewish interests worldwide of any responsibility for their terrorist actions. The Holocaust was also one of the main elements leading to the creation of the State of Israel, which has meant death, ethnic cleansing, and untold hardship for the Palestinians, while destabilizing an already fractious region. Numerous Holocaust museums are in operation around the world, even in nations who fought the Germans. The United Nations has declared a World Holocaust Day, as a matter of fact, and an official federal Jewish History Month awaits George Bush's approval. I guess we're not going to see the real Jewish history, are we? All we're going to see is Holocaust this and Holocaust that. I'd like to see it where they show the Jews lining up the Christians in Russia, 65 million of them, and shooting them. That's what I'd like to see in Jewish History Month. I'd like to see Menachem Begin and the Shin Bet and the Irgun blowing up the King David Hotel and the 300 people that were killed there screaming and crying under the bricks. I'd like to see them showing Menachem Begin with his knife opening the bowels of 100 Palestinians in Deir Yassin to terrorize them and then send them the other 600 away so that they could tell everybody and printing it all over the area so that a few weeks later when the war started, Palestinians, terrified, got up and left, and then the Jews wouldn't let them back to their homes. When they came back, they were met by soldiers and said, "Nope, you can't come back to your house. This is ours now. We're special. We're Jews. We're going to take it from you." No, you're not going to see that during Jewish History Month, unless, of course, you see it at JewWatch.com. I only have a few minutes left, just 5 minutes, and I have all these wonderful stories I want to relate, so I better move a little bit faster. As we've said before in the past, Express, the large newspaper in France, which is one of the most influential and reputable magazines, La Express, now has acknowledged that everything is false about the Auschwitz gas chamber, that for decades has been shown to tens of thousands of tourists yearly. Auschwitz, the Memory of Evil, a lengthy article by journalist and historian Eric Conan, a respected anti-revisionist, appears in the January 19th to the 25th issue, pages 54 to 73. Express also reports that after a five-year battle among the experts, or the so-called experts, Polish President Lech Walesa has decided that the new revised number of dead to be inscribed at the Birkenau Monument will be 1,500,000. Well, that was a few years ago, and now it's down to 1.1 million, and it's evidently going to go down to 80,000, and that's as far as I'm going to go on those. The next thing I want to talk about is an article that I found in the Islamic Republic News Agency, entitled, it's an editorial, that Iran is not anti-Semitic. The author says that an Iranian paper referred to the long history of Iranians' coexistence with their Jewish fellow countrymen on Tuesday, stressing that Iran is not an anti-Semitic state, and that Zionism is by no means equal to Judaism. The English-language Tehran Times said, quote, "The Jews lived peacefully in Iran for over 25 centuries, both when it was a Zoroastrian majority country and after it became a Muslim majority country," unquote. The editorial further commented on the recent hue and cry made on Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad's anti-Zionist statements. Quote, "A careful examination of history shows that the Jews have actually been safer in Iran than in Western countries," unquote. Comparing the Jews' living conditions in a number of Western, particularly European countries, with their situation in Iran, the article stressed that the Jews have never been banned from Iran, whereas they were banned from certain European countries. The Jews of Iran were never locked up in ghettos, as was the case in some European states. There's never been a crystal knocked or the night of broken glasses in Iran. The ancient Persians were always opposed to racism, oppression, religious persecution, and slavery. And this tradition is still alive in modern Iran. With all of this history, how could people call Iran an anti-Semitic country? After the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution in Iran, the Western media started to image Iran's new government as an anti-Semitic one. Stressing that Iranians are opposed to the racist ideology of Zionists who have occupied Palestine, displaced many Palestinians from their homeland, denied them the right of return, and oppressed the Palestinians who remain in the occupied territories, Tehran Times added, "Everyone who criticizes Zionism is not an anti-Semite. Judaism is not Zionism, and Zionism is not Judaism. Even many Orthodox Jews, like the members of the Nuturai Karta organization, are opposed to Zionism." Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? I bet you've never heard that so beautifully expressed as in this particular editorial. It further regretted, that is the Tehran Times, that the Western media usually ignore the fact that Iran has a Jewish community, because it would ruin the false image of Iran as an anti-Semitic country that they have created for their sucker audiences. However, on rare occasions, a few Western media outlets have reported the fact that Jews are living normal lives in Iran. I guess, you know, they must run the press and run the malls and do all the buying and selling. Oh, my. Well, that's the way the normal life seems to be here for Jewish people. Some say that Jews who are opposed to Zionism are afflicted with self-hatred. That is just Zionist propaganda. Did anyone ever say that white South Africans who were opposed to apartheid were afflicted with self-hatred? The Daily asked. Reiterating Iranians' respect for Judaism as a monotheistically divine revealed religion, it said in 2,500 years, not one synagogue has been destroyed in Iran. Jewish graveyards have never been desecrated in Iran. In contrast, this still occurs in some Western countries. Iran is not a racist country, stressed the Daily, noting that in fact the country has been recognized as one of the pioneers of the anti-racist struggle. Isn't that interesting? I find that extremely interesting. Frederick Tobin, the director of the Adelaide Institute in Australia, believes that Israel was created based on the Holocaust myth. The Mayor News Agency conducted an interview with Tobin to ask why Western countries were so outraged when Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad called the Holocaust a myth. He said that the Holocaust is a lie because none of its three main pillars on which it rests are factually proven or true. One, Germany. Hitler systematically exterminated European Jewry. There is simply no proof of this claim. According to Tobin, it was a transfer of Jews, and together with Zionist collaboration, German Jews arrived in Palestine with their property. Others were moved out of German territory, and Auschwitz was a transit camp. Two, the killing was done in huge chemical slaughterhouses, the homicidal gas chambers. This, says Tobin, is a technical impossibility because you can work out how long it would take, for example, to kill 1 million people, the size of a city like Adelaide, without anyone finding out about it. The world would soon have found out that President Bush lied about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction, and the lie didn't last even a year. Three, Tobin said 6 million Jews were killed. The number is a mythical or religious number. And although at one time the numbers killed at Auschwitz was claimed to be 4 million, then reduced to 1.5 million and now down to 500,000, the 6 million remains the same. Why? And anyone who questions these three points is imprisoned. And revisionists must ask these questions if they wish to know the facts about the Holocaust story. I find revisionism very, very interesting. It's like a mouse giving a finger when you're criticizing the Jews and their Holocaust story. You're standing there like a little mouse in Africa with your finger, your index finger in the air, and a charging elephant now has his hoof 1 inch over your little mouse body, and he's about to crush you, and you're still giving him the finger. Because that's how much power you have, since they have so much media and you have nothing. You're like a little mouse being stepped on by a huge Jewish elephant. Mr. Tobin said that the international anger against the Iranian president's words clearly expressed the view that the post-World War II world order is held together by the Holocaust myth. You begin by stating a fact that Jews were moved out of Europe. Then you exaggerate the suffering such rooting causes to individual Jews. The suffering is not denied by anyone. Then outright lying occurs. The Jews were gassed because Hitler hated them. World War II was more than Hitler and the Jews. Hitler disconnected the German economy from international predatory capitalism and bartered freely with nations that refused to be locked into debt finance, which was mainly controlled by international Jewish finance. Mr. Tobin of Adelaide says, because the Jewish Holocaust is a lie, it must be protected legally. The hysterical reactions by world leaders indicates the Zionists have a strong hold on these individuals and their governments. The Holocaust has become a religion. In European countries, you can criticize and defame Jesus, Mary, etc., but you cannot criticize the Jews and their Holocaust. Germar Rudolph, who has written the definitive The Rudolph Report, which refutes the claims that gassings occurred at Auschwitz. Other individuals have done likewise. Fritjof Meyer in Germany, he follows left-wing politics, and so no prison for him, claims that Auschwitz itself was not a killing or a gassing camp, but that gassings occurred in two farmhouses outside of the Auschwitz-Birkenau camp. To date, no one has found remains of these two farmhouses. He says the Iranian president was correct in what he stated, and the hatred towards him and his words indicates how powerful his words were. The world listened to the president. Why? Because the Holocaust justifies the Jews' treatment of Palestinians. Without Holocaust, no reason to ethically cleanse Palestine. So, says Tobin, the Zionist state of Israel, a European colonial entity, continues the racist policies against Palestinians because of what the Jewish state happened to Jews in Europe, Holocaust, which equals a lie. Israel is thus built on a lie. And that's the end of our show today, because I'm well out of time. Thank you very much. Come back to www.jewwatch.com or any of the other websites where this radio program will be found. Thank you, and have a very nice day. I want to remind you how we who are Gentiles, whether we be Americans or British or Germans or Russians, or whether we be Muslims from the Middle East or Africans or the Chinese or anyone else around the world who are non-Jewish, have been influenced by the hegemony of the Jewish supremacists around the world. The people who have even started vicious revolutions in China and Russia and in Eastern Europe, and who have used their swords to slit the throats of millions and millions of white people and of yellow people around this world. And I'm afraid if they get control of the United States the way they got control of the Soviet Union, that they will begin slicing up the throats of white people like they've done before. That's what they seem to do in Palestine whenever they can get by with a look at Menachem Begin, slicing up people, gutting them while they're alive and screaming at Deir Yassin, bombing the women and children who were the families of British soldiers in the King David Hotel in Jerusalem. These are a vicious people, according to their history, people who like to keep their history secret, but who like to expose the linens of other people in public, even if the linens of other people are totally clean. The Jewish supremacists, using their press, are able to show exactly what they want to show, which means they can make up lies and say, look at these dirty sheets, when in fact there is no dirt. And if there is, very, very little of it, which is then magnified grotesquely by talking heads, by newspapers, by magazines, and by college professors who are Jewish supremacists. We have all suffered at the hands of Jewish supremacy. We have been overly taxed by governments that support huge military projects because they are simply the annex of occupied Palestine, which is ruled by Zionists. And they rule the governments of the United States, of England, and they used to run the government of Russia. And the oligarchs, who are Jewish, own all of the resources of Russia, whether it's the TV stations or the newspapers, transportation, oil, you name it. They owned it. They know how to, through hook or crook, get their fingers into every nation's pile of goodies and latch onto it for themselves and for their own people. And are they fair when they do it? No, they're not fair. They're able to maintain their power by only appointing Jewish supremacists to run their businesses and to run their governments. And so you have tons of Jews in the Clinton administration, in the Eisenhower administration, and in the administration of both of the Bush presidents, Bush 1 and Bush 2, and if you go to Jew Watch, you can find the names and the titles of those powerful Jews who have been running the White House for many, many years, and they shall continue to do so as long as we allow it. You and I have a responsibility to take our nations back, to rid the world of the power of Jewish supremacy, to pull these people down so that they live on a level like we do, as common people and not as people who think they are better than anybody else, when in fact they are not, as can be seen by the record of horror that history has shown to everybody who has the chance to read about it. You may not be able to read about it in the New York Times or in the Jerusalem Post, but you can read about it at Jewwatch.com. And I suggest you spend at least a few minutes a day up there. I've got over 1,000 pages of information. You would be amazed at what you can discover at Jewwatch.com. And I hope that the Jewish supremacists aren't bothering you the way they try to bother me. Thank you, and have a very nice evening.